Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
Laguna Beach, KX93.5.
This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that the opinions expressed on any public affairs show do not reflect those of KX93.5, its management, or the board of directors.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, Orange County, and to all our friends joining us today. Coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX93.5. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Laguna Roundtable. I'm Ari Grayson. My co-host Jim Kennedy has the day off. Thank you for joining me for this week's guest, Dr. Aaron Craig, founding executive director of Unity Middle College High School, a public charter high school serving grades 9 to 12 within Orange Unified School District's boundaries. It's a pleasure having you here in the studio with me this morning, Dr. Craig.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Grayson.
I must concede, as a person deeply committed to education and as an educator for so many years, I really don't know nearly as much about charter schools as I probably should. So I'm so looking forward to having you here today and to learning what you can try and teach me, at least anyway. Let's start out with this. I think it might be beneficial for all of us if you would explain a few things about charter schools. So first of all, what is a charter school and how does a charter school receive its charter?
Sure. So a charter school is a public school. So it could be a public elementary school, middle school, K-8, or a public high school, meaning it is at no cost to the student. And charter schools receive their charter. What you have to do is you start the process writing a charter petition. The process to get a charter approved in California is quite intense and rigorous, and the petitions in California have 16 elements, and you must meet the legal requirements. It's everything from the educational program to governance to how grievances would be filed and everything. Also, what would happen potentially if your charter was revoked and what the authorizer would do if that was the case. And so really what a charter petition is it outlines all the details for the school. So to receive a charter petition or to receive approval, first you write the petition and you submit it. In California, typically it's submitted to a local school district. I submitted mine to Orange Unified School District. Okay. Since I desire to serve students that live within Orange Unified School District boundaries. And they review your petition extensively through multiple layers, multiple teams at the district, and also legal counsel. And then you hold a public hearing. You do a presentation, and you have speakers who speak, typically parents, teachers, and people from the community who absolutely support your mission, vision, and educational program. And people who potentially do not support your charter petition have the opportunity to speak as well.
So the school district that you're going to be serving in itself actually has the ability to listen and to perhaps deny you your charter?
That's absolutely correct. Okay. So in the charter petition, there's only 5 reasons why a charter can be denied, but they are quite high expectations or high stakes. For example, likelihood to be successful in implementing the program. There's some gray area in that. So the idea with the charter petition is to be as extensive and as thorough as possible and really laying out almost every detail, but not be too specific so you still have freedom to, modify changes to ensure and convince the local school district that you will be successful in implementation.
Just for my own sake, trying to get my head around this a little bit, it seems as though you're developing a charter school that is going to compete with the local school district. So the people who you're going to be competing with for students and for services, educational services that you're going to be providing, actually has oversight over whether you receive a charter so that you can compete with them?
That's absolutely the truth. And that,
okay,
it,
that seems like
a conflict, right?
It would seem like a conflict of interest in just about any other arena. So, okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure I'm hearing this correctly because it seems somewhat odd to me. But, okay, thank you. If you would, please continue.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. And so the idea is you submit the petition, they examine it, and they make a recommendation to the board. The recommendation could be approval with certain conditions that they would like you to meet, or a denial. And then the board takes that recommendation, and then the board makes a decision whether they will accept the recommendation or whether they will go against the recommendation and make a decision. If your charter is not approved, whether it was denied at a local school district level or not acted upon, you have the right to then appeal to the county.
Okay.
So to answer your question of, is there somewhat of a conflict or could there, you know, be some resistance in that area? Yes, that is the case many times with authorizers and charter petitioners such as myself. And so really having the opportunity, if that does, if a conflict or resistance does play a part into a potential denial, having the opportunity to go to the county is really a positive next step for charters. And if you get denied by the county, you also have the right to then appeal to the state of California to have your charter petition approved.
Once you receive a charter, how do charter schools differ from full public-funded institutions, full public schools?
So in the past, there have been large differences, but actually most recently with the changing in the funding formula to the local control funding formula, this is the first time ever in California that charter schools and traditional public schools are funded identically. So the new funding formula has a base funding amount that is per pupil, and then there's something called an unduplicated pupil count. So this is the first time in the history of charter school funding in the state of California that public charter schools are funded almost identically to traditional public schools with the local control funding formula. So with this new funding formula, no matter if it's a traditional public or a charter, there's a base funding amount, and then there's supplementational grants and concentration grants that are added on for students who are English learners, qualify for free or reduced priced meals, or are foster youth. And so as far as charter funding right now, it is the most hopeful and exciting scenario because we are now almost on a level playing field as far as funding per pupil with traditional public schools, which has never been the case in the past.
There's certainly no question that public schools, just like any other institution or business, can more effectively and more efficiently provide their services. Why should people send their kids to a charter school rather than demanding improvement from traditional public schools?
This is a great question, and I get asked this all the time. So my answer might not be the answer that you would be expecting. So I don't believe that all parents should send their children to charter schools rather than demanding improvement for traditional public schools. I'm of the belief system that parents should have a choice. And they should have a choice for a quality, free public education for their child. So I think that both should be moving simultaneously. We should continue, we should all be, whether we're charter, whether we're public, whether we are private or a magnet school, we should all be on the continuous cycle of improvement and demanding improvement in all areas. And so if a parent feels that they are not getting the educational experience at a traditional public school or at a private school or at a charter school, they have the opportunity with another charter school to send their children there and have that choice. So my belief really isn't it. It's one or the other. It's we should all be working together and have a cornucopia of quality schools and different flavors and different versions to best support the diverse needs of our children, not just within Orange County, but within the state of California and nationally.
So in other words, a parent could go and basically interview or shop for a school much like they would for a church or a synagogue or a mosque or any place else that they would consider important in their lives. So you can find at one school, for example, perhaps I go to a public school here in Orange County, and I find that I really don't like the attitude of the principal or the teachers that my child might be assigned to work with, whatever it might be. I can go to a charter school and I can see perhaps at your charter school maybe things are a little bit different. Maybe I check out another charter school and find that, you know what, may be very similar to yours, but there are a few things that I like a little bit better or a little bit less, and I can base my decision on that and then say, okay, this is where I'm going to be sending my child to public school, whether it's a public charter or whether it's a traditional public school, and I have now the freedom to make that decision. So I've got a little bit more educational control than, for example, when I was a kid growing up, you know, if you lived within this school district, that's where you had to send your child. And even if there were a high school or a middle school or whatever closer to you that perhaps you even liked better for whatever reasons, you know, maybe, you know, your social activities are also, you know, more closely aligned with that school's location. And so you have a lot of friends and family or whatever it might be going to that other school. I never had that opportunity to make that choice. It was you go here or you go to private school.
Yep. I mean, that's absolutely, shopping is a great analogy. And a good scenario of that with charter schools in Orange County is in Santa Ana. So many parents in Santa Ana understand that they have a choice in charter schools, and that's exactly what they do. They shop. They attend all the informational sessions. They speak with the principal. They go to the open houses. Their students might do shadow days at different charter schools within the community, and then the family makes a decision. And they have the opportunity to put their eggs in multiple baskets and to submit intent to enroll forms into different schools. And if charter schools get more applications than they have room for, then they hold a lottery. And so parents in Orange County are absolutely learning more about the rights that they do have with school choice, why, you know, getting a little bit wiser and figuring out how to maximize their children's opportunity. And I also like to use the analogy of, you know, if you talk about shopping, I think about when we go out to dinner, right? How would we feel, or I would be a little upset if every day of my life, if I wanted to go out to dinner, I needed to go to the closest restaurant that was, you know, located or within my boundary for me to eat at. It wouldn't make sense, and I wouldn't be getting the best food that might be the most nutritious for me or right. might be, you know, the flavor that I like. And I believe it's the same thing with schools. We should have the right, everyone should have the right to really look at the different models, at the leadership, at the instructional program, of the focus of the school, of the needs of your child, and see which, you know, leadership team and which school, their vision and mission match what you have in your mind, so we can really make sure that children are getting the diverse needs met that we have within our county.
So it's not a one-size-fit-all solution, and I think most parents would certainly be pleased with knowing that at least they have some option, especially when you're talking about something which is so fundamental, not only to, you know, our lives as a young person in school, but how that shapes us and prepares us for future success in life. I mean, this is putting the very foundation of our ability to function in a democratic society. You know, it's just right there at the forefront. So we need to make sure that people not only have good choices, but in a world where we're always touting capitalism is great because of the competition it provides, schools can certainly stand up and hopefully take up their game a bit by having competition for the students that they have. It's no longer going to be just a given. I just want to remind our listeners that you are tuned to KX 93.5 FM. The show is Laguna Roundtable. I'm host Dr. Ari Grayson. My guest today, Dr. Aaron Craig, is the founding executive director of Unity Middle College High School. One of the things that I've often heard is people expressing concern that charter public schools will take money away from traditional public schools. Where do charter schools actually receive their funding?
So the majority of funding for charter schools comes from the state of California and Proposition 98, where 88% of that goes to K-12 public education and about 11 to 12 goes to community colleges. And so there are a lot of myths out there as far as charter school funding and taking money from districts. And as a charter leader, I absolutely look at part of my role as educating others about really why do people say that and what does that really mean? So as I mentioned previously with the local control funding formula, schools are given an amount of money per pupil for that student. And it's varying depending on the needs of the student. As I mentioned, free or reduced lunch, you know, foster care or English learner receive more. And so the idea and the reason why people say that charters are taking money from districts is the money is being redirected. And so you're paid per pupil, but on average daily attendance. How many students are sitting in that seat each day? And so the money, if I'm serving 100 students in year one, and their 100 students that would have attended the local authorizing Orange Unified School District, that money per pupil will no longer be going directly to the school district because the school district will no longer be serving those students for their educational program. Another example would be if in certain situations the school district still provides special education services to a charter school. And if that's the case, the school district receives the special education funding and then they provide the service for the student. So it's not really that charters are taking money from local school districts. Money is being redirected based on the pupils that the charter schools are serving to educate.
Do charter schools receive or require funds beyond what's provided by taxpayer funding?
So particularly for charter schools, the first 3 years are quite painful because you don't get funding based on your enrollment until October when you are already up and running. And so right now, Unity Middle College, we're in year zero and I am, you know, planning and going to be acquiring a facility and doing all of the tenant improvements. And so you have to raise additional funding, whether it's through the public school startup grant, through the federal government, whether it's through other grants or private or public donations. Because there's no way to get your school off the ground and to be able to even operate unless you gain startup funding. In my mind, it's between $500,000 and $1 million that is necessary for me to acquire to really get the school going. And so after the third year, when your enrollment stabilizes, so for example, after the third year at my school, I'll have 400 students and I will stay at 400 students, then your budget is, you know, balances out and you don't have that painful sort of the startup costs that you need to cover from the get-go.
We touched on this just a little bit, but I was wondering if you could explain a little bit more precisely, how does a parent actually go about identifying and selecting a charter school for their child?
That's a great question. So it really depends on the parents, and there's many different methods. There are parents who know they have a choice, are eager to find, you know, the best choice for their child, and they are actively searching out potential options, traditional public, charter, and private simultaneously, and it could even be multiple years before their student could even be at that school. So there's that type of parent. And so what they do is they do research. They might sit down and talk with, you know, the administration. They could ask to come walk the school or, you know, spend the life of the day of a student. So that's one type of parent. There's also types of parents that they have very large challenges as far as really supporting their students on survival, as far as getting food on the table and paying the rent, that they want to ensure that their child is in a small, safe school. And so many times when you start a charter school, particularly if you're serving an area that has underserved children, that many parents just, they're so excited that there's going to be a small school, their students won't be subjected to a lot of the pressures and the, you know, the factors that, particularly at a high school I'm speaking of, because I operate in the high school world. But after parents really start understanding the magic that can happen and the power of a highly effective charter school best supporting their child, it gets beyond the small, safe school. It gets to, I really understand that you care about my child and that you believe, and not just believe, you are supporting and guiding that child from the moment they walk in the door before they become a ninth grader during the summer to after they exit as a graduating senior to and through college. So it really, there's a wide spectrum.
What do you anticipate the average class size to be at your high school?
Sure. So our total enrollment will be 400 students when we're at maximum capacity, and our class size will be 25-1 on average. We will never have a class that is higher than 30 students with the exception of PE. As a middle college high school, our students, when academically ready, will be taking community college courses the same time as high school courses. And so throughout any given day, with the exception of Fridays, we'll be transporting students back and forth from Unity Middle College High School to Santiago Canyon College, and they will be operating like college students. And so when this is the case at a middle college high school, class sizes that are classes that are occurring on the high school campus are even smaller than what a traditional student to teacher ratio would be. And although there's mixed research that talks about class size numbers and where really that push point is on where it makes a difference, I can absolutely say with qualitative information in the last 12 experience that having a 12 years of experience that I've had, having a class of 25 versus a class of 45 is a very different atmosphere as far as students' ability to get the support that they need to increase their learning.
Oh, there's no question. And we see that all the time at the college level. You know, we sometimes see classrooms where we'll have, you know, 75, 150 people in them. What I try to do in some of my classes where I know we really need to have a tight, focused environment, I will actually schedule a class for a conference room that will only hold a maximum of 20 people so that we can actually have the interaction and the dialogue that I feel is necessary in order for students to receive a very valuable education. Can and do charter schools then educate children more effectively than traditional public schools?
It depends on the charter school. It depends on the traditional public school. There are a wide range of quality in all educational models. What is the biggest difference with charter schools, with traditional public schools, with the ability to get to outperform or to better meet the needs of students as compared to traditional public schools is the structure of the school, is our ability to be nimble, to do action research, to, if there's a challenge, the process that it takes at a charter school is so much less complex and so much less
bureaucratic
and okay, step good. Heavy
yeah.
That if there's an issue, we can look at it as a team, teachers, administrators, counselors, we can analyze the data, we can brainstorm, we can put an action plan together, and we can get it moving that next day as compared to waiting for multiple processes and steps to achieve the same task. So I don't believe that all charter schools can educate students more effectively than traditional public schools. There are amazing and excellent traditional public schools that exist in this county today and all across the United States. But charter schools have the ability to move quicker and to transform and differentiate at a faster rate.
A little bit leaner and hopefully a little bit more responsive. I know some parents probably worry that charter schools operate without any organizational oversight. Who provides the oversight of charter schools and how do they do so?
Absolutely. So oversight is a key component, and obtaining authorization is not just the green light to go ahead and open a school forever. Obtaining authorization is the green light to take the next steps and hold yourself accountable, because your authorizer absolutely is going to hold you accountable from start to finish and continually when you're opening. And what that looks like, it's in a few areas. One is academics, and the second really is financial. So your authorizer, whether it be the local school district, or for me, potentially, hopefully, it will be Orange County Department of Ed, that will be who has the oversight over the charter school. So typically, you submit monthly attendance reports talking about your enrollment with the students. There's financial reports and quarterly and interim budgets that you submit. And there's that constant really of communication, not just the overall educational program. They'll send out the special education team to come evaluate your special education program to ensure that you are not just legally compliant, but you are best legally compliant in meeting the needs of your special education students. And so there is heavy oversight, but it's not negative oversight. A lot of charter people, myself included, we thrive in accountability. We thrive in it. We love reaching those goals. And you set a goal, and we will do whatever it takes, obviously, within ethical and legal boundaries, to really reach that goal. And so for high-quality operators, the oversight isn't really a threat or a challenge. It's something that you hold to yourself, because you really want to make sure that you're not just making your overall gains, that you're making those gains for every subgroup and for every child. And so if you're doing what you're saying and you're saying what you're doing, and the oversight really is not that much of an issue.
Do faculty and administrators receive the same kind of scrutiny and have to meet the same kind of educational standards as do their full traditional public school counterparts?
In most cases, yes. In Unity Middle College, absolutely yes. All administrators would have to have at least a master's degree and an administrative credential. All teachers absolutely need to have a single subject credential, and they have to clear their credential within a certain time frame. Okay. And so you know, 30 years ago, when charter schools were just starting, there were different laws in different states about credentialing requirements. But in California, California is extremely strict for charter schools, and it is no longer acceptable to have a teacher that is not fully credentialed be instructing your students in core classes.
Well, one of the things that I know has taken hold in the last several years in the public schools is Common Core. Does Common Core apply to charter schools as well? And if it does, would you mind explaining to some of our listeners who may not be familiar with Common Core how it works and what it actually is supposed to do for our students?
Sure. So California Common Core standards apply to all public schools in California, including charter schools. So that's another myth. Some people think that charter schools don't have to teach the standards. We absolutely have the exact same standards, the Common Core standards, and the same accountability measures. And we're in a very exciting time right now where accountability's changing, assessment's changing, funding's changing, standards have changed. And so there's a lot of unknown right now. But as far as the Common Core standards, really what it focuses on is increasing critical thinking skills, increasing students' ability to look at information. I mean, look at a problem, take a position, gather credible information, sift through it, analyze it, take a position and form an argument, and do that across the content areas. So previously, California standards were really based on mostly factual and procedural knowledge, and the assessment were multiple choice tests. No Child Left Behind brought great things for accountability, but we realized that it really wasn't increasing the real skills that students need to solve the complex problems that are in our world. Right. So Common Core addresses that, not just in English and math, but through English learner curriculum and across all the different content areas. And there's a lot of controversy right now about Common Core and testing and things like that. But if we take away all of the exterior factors and we really dig deep and we look at those standards, who would not want their child at a younger age to be able to look at credible or look at evidence and determine which is credible and really defend their point? I think we all would. Who wouldn't want their child to be able to look at data and formalize patterns and start looking at trends and be able to project something in the future? I think that there's a lot of external factors and other things that are being thrown in around Common Core that some of them are absolutely valid and real issues. Right. But if we get to the heart of it and we look at it, who doesn't want more learning and deeper learning and stronger conceptual knowledge and metacognitive knowledge for our children?
Well, I mean, as an educator, I recognize that, you know, what I can't just give my students knowledge. Knowledge is something they can get from their smart device. That's no great trick. But when they're out there in the workforce, they need to be able to think critically. They need to be good consumers of information. Because I'm kind of chuckling to myself when you say that, well, who wouldn't want their child to be a better consumer of information, to be able to think critically? We had our education forum here in Orange County recently, and I had the good fortune to be asked to moderate that. And one of the things that I mentioned was I had recently heard a state legislator from Texas railing against critical thinking, and his argument was critical thinking tells our children they should question what they already know to be right and true. And I find that to be a very scary proposition because, again, coming from an educator's perspective, if there is an argument or if there is research that you're putting out there, it ought to be able to stand scrutiny. And anything that you believe that cannot withstand scrutiny is just that. It's a belief. And as educators, our responsibility is to try and help people to be able to discern belief from something which has good scientific evidence supporting it. Just to remind you, you are tuned to KX93.5 FM. The show is Laguna Roundtable, and I'm host Dr. Ari Grayson. My guest today is Dr. Aaron Craig, founding executive director of Unity Middle College High School. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
Really don't mind if you sit this one out. My words but a whisper, your deafness a shout. I may make you feel that I can't make you think. Your sperm's in the gutter, your love's in the sink.
So you ride sails over the fields, and you make all your animal deals, and your wise men don't know how it feels to be thick as a brick. And castle virtues are all swept away in the tidal destruction, the moral malaise, the elastic retreat rings the close of play as the last wave uncovers the new-fangled way. But your new shoes are worn at the heels, and your suntan is rapidly peeling, and your wise men don't know how it feels to be thick as a brick. And the love that I feel, it's so far away. I'm a bad dream that I just had today. And you shake your head. You said it's a shame. Spin me back down the years and the days of my youth. Draw the lace and black curtains and shut out the whole truth. Spin me down the long ages, let them sing the song.
Moving back onto our students themselves, obviously, not all students have the same academic abilities. If a student has special needs, perhaps a need we might find in a young person with a developmental disability, such as autism spectrum disorder or Asperger's syndrome, will parents find that kind of support for their child at a charter school?
Absolutely. That's another myth. Some people believe that charter schools do not accept special education students. That's absolutely false. And so there's different models for special education, and it has to do with funding and legal responsibility. I mentioned one casually a few minutes ago, is when you're a charter school, one option for special education is to function as an arm of the district, meaning the district gets all of the funding for special ed, and depending on the special education students that you serve at your school, they provide all of the support and they assume all of the legal responsibility. There's also another option, which is a newer option, which is working with a charter special education planning association. It's called a charter CELPA or a CHELPA. And in particular, this is the route that I will be taking, working with El Dorado County Charter CELPA. And so what that means is they provide support and oversight for you as a charter school, but you receive all of the special education funding and you also maintain all of the special education oversight. And so what that means as a charter school is you must have a strong special education administrator and a strong special education team that has the skills and the knowledge and the ability to implement those services with fidelity to ensure that every child and every child with an IEP or that requires services is getting those services on an accurate and ongoing basis.
So if a parent comes to you and they have a child who has a learning disability such as dyslexia, not a problem. You will provide special attention, tutoring, or whatever it might be necessary to ensure that student has the skills necessary to succeed.
Absolutely. So if a student comes to us with an IEP, with an individualized education plan, which is the legal document that really talks about their goals and the special education services that by law they are required to receive, we will absolutely implement them with fidelity and continue to hold IEP team meetings, to ensure that the services that the last IEP team agreed to provide are the best services for the student. And if a student, for example, might not be special, might not have an IEP or qualify for special education, but we see that they are struggling and the interventions and the supports that we're putting in place for them are not working, we accelerate them and we start something called a student success team. And so that meets regularly where we're identifying what's working, what's not, to really ensure that as a team, student, parent, teachers, counselor, and administrators are, you know, exhausting all resources before a recommendation to, you know, potential testing for special ed was made. Because sometimes students just need interventions as right. compared to being labeled as a special education student.
Oh, there's no question about that. I think we see that all too often where a disability might be misdiagnosed, or a student who is quiet doesn't necessarily mean that they're not highly intelligent. They may not be comfortable in the environment for a number of reasons. It may be a cultural difference. You know, we see that all the time, especially in Arizona, where our college is actually on Indian reservation land. So we tend to get a lot of students from the tribe, the local tribe, but the students that we get have a tendency to be a little bit more quiet. They, according to, you know, most tribal tradition, they won't look you directly in the eye. They won't challenge you in the same way as most of their most of the other students, their counterparts in the classroom, might. Do charter schools then have, and it sounds from what we said a little bit earlier, that they may have a little bit more flexibility in fulfilling their educational mission and perhaps serving students with disability? Do they have a little bit more flexibility than traditional public schools?
As far as overall or for specifically for students with disabilities?
Both.
Okay. So overall, the answer to that is absolutely yes. So as a charter petitioner and as a founding executive director, myself and the founding team, we wrote the mission. We wrote the vision. We created that as our team, as our founding team, identifying really what we wanted this school to look like and what we wanted all of our students to be able to do. Whereas a traditional public school within a traditional public school district, they have a mission that has, you know, been longstanding right. or could have been revised as compared to having their hand in the creation, development, and refining of it. Also, charter petitions in California are typically authorized for 5 years. And so when you're authorized, you're just not authorized forever. You're authorized for 5 years and you have to go through the renewal process again. So as your school evolves and grows, and as the world changes, charters have the ability to then revise their petition and not completely stray from their educational program, but to include cutting edge innovation, to include new things that they want to ensure that are best supporting the students moving forward. And as far as special education, traditional public schools and charter schools absolutely must and in general do implement the accommodations, you know, per the IEP at all times. But in charter schools, if you do function as your own charter SELPA, or if you do take the route that I shared that I will be going with, you have the ability to increase services quicker if that's something that is appropriate okay. for the student as compared to a traditional public school. Again, really just with the structure and the processes and procedures to get things done.
Great. You know, and overall, just my general sense is that as a charter school, there you're a little bit leaner, a little bit better able to respond to situations than what we've seen in traditional public schools.
So I think leaner is a great way to say it because, for example, in the first year of Unity Middle College, I'm the executive director, but I'll also be the founding principal just because you wear multiple hats at charter schools. And it also, that does, it has great effects. It also has some long-term sort of burnout effects as well. But as a charter school, you do run leaner, absolutely. I'm the principal, but I'll also serve as the counselor and I'll be serving lunch the same day. So really we operate in the mindset of whatever it takes. If there's something that needs to be accomplished, and if you create your team of all like-minded individuals like that, whatever it takes for the students, everyone's comfortable with stepping in and wearing those hats. And when there's a gap, people just fill them because everyone's really there for the students every day.
More of a team effort, it sounds like.
Yeah.
How do charter schools in general, because bottom line is academic performance, how do they compare to traditional public schools on SATs and admissions to colleges and universities?
So it depends. There was a study recently out of Stanford, the Credo study, that compared, I believe, Los Angeles charter schools with traditional Los Angeles public schools. And what that study found is not only are charter school students, and particularly we're talking underserved, free and reduced lunch populations, low SES students, that they are not just outperforming them with high school graduation, they're outperforming traditional public schools with college acceptance and persistence. But an area of growth for charters, and I also believe for traditional public schools, are SAT and ACT scores, particularly for underserved students. So approximately 10 years ago, the big push for charter schools in California was college ready, college ready, college ready. Let's get our students college ready. And so that was great. We were getting more students graduated from high school. More students were meeting the A through G requirements to have the opportunity to apply and be accepted. But what we found as a charter movement in California is our students were getting accepted, but they weren't getting through. And so the newest phase, and it really coincides with my timeline with opening Unity Middle College High School, is how can we get our students college and career ready simultaneously with the real job skills that they can apply to the complex world. So that's really the new phase of not just charters, but in general, all schools. And part of that is increasing ACT and SAT scores. So it's an area of growth for all public schools, I believe, particularly for students from underserved backgrounds.
California charter schools serve a large number of students identified as low achieving or otherwise at-risk students. And in fact, California charter schools are reportedly serving some of our state's most underserved students. I wanted to find out from you, what would you consider as something that would make a person potentially at risk when they come to your school?
So there's multiple factors. And some of them are quantitative that you can see on paper. For example, income level or English language proficiency level, or are they foster youth or not? But other factors are not visible, where a student might not look like they are at risk on paper, but maybe they have social emotional challenges that they've been dealing with or struggling from depression. And so at risk is a term, or underserved is a term that we use in education to talk about students who potentially need additional support or do not have as much opportunity as the general population due to a variety of factors.
What does your school do to help ensure students are able to perform at an appropriate level?
Sure. So, and this is one of the keys to effective charter schools and also effective middle college high schools, is multi-layered support structures. And I use something called the add and subtract model by Nancy Hoffman. So here's the idea. If you add resources, add support, add money, add opportunity from the get-go to students, and they start experiencing success with those supports, and all students are different and on a different timeline, then you can gradually release those supports and subtract them out. And so, for example, with dual enrollment or with underserved or at-risk students taking college courses while in high school, their first college course, they might need more support. They might need structured study sessions with other students. They might need support navigating how to go to office hours. And also there's finances that are associated with a student taking a college course in high school. So what the idea is, after that student finds success in the college course with these support structures, then they're gradually released. Students start taking more college courses, more challenging college courses. They might find out, well, I took a couple courses, you know, in engineering. I don't think I like engineering. I want to try pure mathematics and take another course in mathematics. So the idea is every child is different. Every child needs a different sort of recipe or medicine, for lack of a better word. And at a charter school, we have the ability and the nimbleness to meet those needs. Another layer is something called a class called family. Every Unity Middle College High School student will be in a family. And what that is that 25 grade-alike students with a teacher, and they stay in that family all 4 years, from the beginning of ninth grade all the way till they graduate. They don't have all of their academic classes with their family, but they meet in family for 30 minutes every day and do, sometimes it's tribes activities. Sometimes it's journaling. Maybe something happened in the community that really has impacted the students and they want to journal about it and then maybe have a class discussion about it. Family is the place where your family teacher holds you accountable, supports you, cares about you, and is really that parent role at school. And so what happens in family is, as ninth graders, students are very reserved and closed off, and they don't want to connect, and they're too cool. And by the time it's the end of ninth grade year, they're calling each other family, and they love their family. And the idea is, many students, particularly those that come to middle colleges or, you know, that have those challenges, might have challenges in their family or might not have access to their family because their parent or parents might be working multiple jobs and they could be caring for their younger siblings. And if we can create a family at school that they feel is, you know, either their family or an addition to their, you know, their family, that will get them involved and know that they will be supporting and holding each other accountable.
I'd just like to remind our listeners, you are tuned to KX 93.5 FM. The show is Laguna Roundtable, and I'm host Dr. Ari Grayson. My guest today is Dr. Aaron Craig, founding executive director of Unity Middle College High School, a public charter high school serving grades 9 to 12 within the Orange County Unified School District. I've heard people say that charter school enrollment doesn't reflect the diversity of the communities that they serve. How do you ensure, when you've got a school that's serving the cities of Anaheim, Santa Ana, and Garden Grove, which is obviously a very, very diverse string of cities around you, how do you ensure that your school is actually going to reflect the general population?
That's a great question. So within the Orange Unified School District community, there are very diverse populations. There's high affluence and there's low. And so as a charter educator, my heart, I want to work with at-risk students. I want to work with students that have challenges finding success in a traditional model. That's absolutely who I desire to serve. So there's a few ways that you can do it. So one idea is, so if I looked at Orange Unified as a sort of overall snapshot, the free and reduced lunch was sort of average. The data was sort of right in the middle range. But so what I did is I targeted the demographic of Orange High School. Orange High School is the highest needs population of the high schools within the school district, and it has the lowest SES community surrounding it. And that's the population that I desire to serve. So the idea is, when we search for buildings, which we're absolutely doing now, aggressively pursuing them, is you locate somewhere that is within a community that has that population to serve. As charter schools, we don't have school buses that take our children to school back and forth every day. And so most students either walk or take public transportation. And so some middle college high schools are located on the college campus. For me, that wasn't optimal, because if we were located on the campus of Santiago Canyon College, we would be up in the hills of Orange. And I would run the risk of, that's a long trek for students to make on their own with no traditional or with no public school bus taking them. So you immerse yourself in the community with the population that you desire to serve. And then we do everything. I host community meetings to walking the streets to, any opportunity, speaking at churches, speaking at community centers, anyone that we can get their ear to talk to them that there's a new choice for a high school coming into the community, we take.
School should be a place where students and teachers are able to demonstrate creativity and innovation. How are your teachers encouraged or empowered to explore new pedagogies? And are your students challenged to think critically? And I think we covered that last one just a little bit on the critical thinking part. So, most importantly, how are your teachers encouraged or empowered to explore new pedagogies?
This is something that I am so excited about. And again, one of the amazing things of being able to write a charter petition and open your own school is you have the ability to create the educational environment and the professional development to foster these items. For example, all of my teachers, whether when they're hired or after they're hired, will be passionate and take on one of our career pathways. So at Unity Middle College High School, students in ninth grade will get a sampling of career pathways, and at the end of ninth grade, they'll make a decision to take a vertically aligned course sequence of high school and college electives in a really of an area of their talent and interest. And so our teachers, depending on what the teachers are interested in, we might have a teacher who wants to take on coding, who really wants to make sure that she is the coding teacher as well as the math teacher. We could also have an English teacher who loves design. And so as the leader of Unity Middle College, I'm ensuring that I am providing these teachers with ongoing professional development. I even have a teacher right now who's taking coding at a local community college a year before we even open, in the hope that she'll get an interview so she can become that teacher. And the idea is ongoing professional development in areas that teachers feel passionate about and they want to grow in. Teacher-driven professional development. Of course, administration has a role in that, and there's certain professional development that needs to occur school-wide and organization-wide. But when teachers and when students take ownership and have choice over their own learning, it is just the best scenario. And another example is on Fridays at Unity Middle College for 2 hours, students will be experiencing creation and innovation labs. So this is going to be a two-hour lab where they will be working with teachers on doing the maker movement, constructing, tinkering with things, understanding how things work, dissecting items, putting them together, and having working professionals in that career pathway there every Friday working collaboratively with the students. And so the ideas in these creation and innovation labs is students eventually will construct semester or year-long outputs that are a problem of student choice that they want to focus on within their community that relates to their career pathway. And so really linking the content, the new Common Core standards, with this career application and bringing in people that are working in the field right now, working with the teachers collaboratively, are going to develop all of those skills on both layers, the students and the teachers simultaneously.
Education begins and ends truly with the teacher that's in the classroom. What, if any, employee protections do teachers and staff receive? In other words, are they unionized, tenured, and so forth?
That's a great question. And so in most independent charter schools, which is what Unity Middle College High School will be, an independent charter school, there are not teachers unions and there is no tenure. All employees are at will. And that goes from a teacher to the janitor to the executive director. Everyone is at will. And so for some, they look at that as, oh my goodness, there's no job protection. What happens if we really get, you know, some administrator and we get done wrong? But if you look at it from the other side, not having that, it's just it's an environment that's based on trust. If there's strong leadership and a strong team that really authentically trust each other professionally, and everyone is moving in the same direction in the best interest of students, it's conversations, it's collaboration. If something's not working, it's let's discuss this. What's not working? Let's brainstorm together and let's make a decision to change that so everyone is feeling supported and happy and we're moving in the right direction for the students. And so teachers do have the right to unionize. And so I want to be very clear on that if it came a day and time where at Unity Middle College High School teachers wanted to form a union and they got enough teachers that were interested in do that, that is absolutely the teacher's
okay,
right.
Good.
But as an independent charter school operator, my experience has I've never gotten to that point ever, even near with the staff. And it really comes down to the relationships between teachers and administration, and everyone is working together in the best interest of the students.
Right. And my concern would be obviously trying to teach subjects that might be a little bit controversial, pushing students perhaps a little bit beyond their normal comfort level. But that's an important part of teaching, and it's an important part of learning. So I think it's important, as you say, that you've got an administrator and a staff that understands overall that these issues are important. And if a teacher does challenge their students in the classroom and parents perhaps complain about the subject matter, having that instructor's back so that they can continue to do what is in the best interest of student learning rather than just trying to make sure that everybody is calm and happy and no ripples are ever made. Unfortunately, we're just about out of time, but before we go, if someone would like to contact you directly to learn more about charter schools or about Unity Middle College High School, what is the website and the best number or email for people to contact you or to receive information?
So you can find us on the web at www.unitymchs.org. You can email me at ecraig, C-R-A-I-G, at unityhigh.org, or feel free to give me a call, and you can reach me directly at 714-642-6624. As a charter leader in Orange County, I feel excited to share information about charters with others, and I look forward to anyone who would like to learn more about Unity Middle College.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. I just want to also thank our audience for joining us today. You've been listening to Laguna Roundtable with co-hosts Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX 93.5 FM. And of course, I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Aaron Craig, founding executive director of Unity Middle College High School. It's been a pleasure having you here today and for sharing so much information. I wish you all the best in your new endeavor.
Thank you so much, Dr. Grayson.
I hope you'll join us again next Sunday. Until then, have a great week.
wondering aloud how we feel today. Last night, sip the sunset, my hand in her hair. We are our own saviors as we start, both our hearts beating life into each other. Wondering aloud, will the years treat us well? As she floats in the kitchen, I'm tasting the smell. Yeah. Off toast as the butter runs, then she comes spilling crumbs on the bed. And I shake my head. And it's only the giving that makes you what you are.